This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No one!
Well, here we go with another Brock and Salk podcast. Good morning, Brock. Or hello. I shouldn't even say good morning. Hello. I don't know what time people are listening to this. How long have we been doing this podcast now? I still don't get it.
A little while. That's a little while.
I still don't get it. Maybe we should do it in podcast voice. Just
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's a draft coming up tomorrow. Maybe we slip into... The draft started. Yeah, we're not going to do that.
No.
Maybe we should, though.
No, if we're going to do any voices, we're going to do Stephon Guyamore. Yes. Yeah. I want you to do every QB draft prospect in that guy's
Malik
voice.
Malik Wylos. Yeah.
Yes.
Desmond.
Stephon Guyamore. Stephon Guyamore.
I was doing... That never gets old. That guy is so funny. Yeah, that's good. Matty Corelli. That'd be fun.
Yes.
I was doing, you know, a voice I was doing for Kyle the other day. Kyle's not with us, he's busy, but he's got a guy who's working on his house doing something with their bathroom, and he's like got a thick Boston accent. And I remember I told you guys the story about like the electrician or plumber, somebody was at my dad's place, and how every guy who does a trade like that in Boston comes up to your house, and when he's done with something, he's like, hey, you got plans for that stove when you're done with it? I mean, I don't know what you're doing. It could be another whatever, but like my girl she could use a new stove. And like, look, I could take it off your hands if you're not going to use it. Now, look, I mean, you could like, I could take it off the bill or like, you know, I could not charge you tax and you just, you know, you give me cash, whatever. But like, I can just take it off. But if you don't want to, it's fine. Like, no big deal. Like, literally everybody with a Boston accent who works in a trade like that always has an angle. It's like, my brother Mickey, like, he collects microwaves and does stuff with them, so, like, whatever. Like, again, if you're going to use a microwave, like, I don't want to even bug you about it. But, like, if you're not, like, again, Mickey does cool stuff, and, like, I take it from you if you don't want it. We could work something out.
Like, that's so good. That's such a good impression.
You do that very well.
Well, I'm literally impersonating an exact person. Like, it's not like, it's not even really an amalgamation. It's just like... I've witnessed that conversation, and it makes me like, this guy was talking to my dad about taking his stove, his range off his hands, and I'm in the corner just like suppressing giggling laughter at the whole thing, because I was visiting, this is like a couple of years ago. So funny, man. So funny.
And so, Larry. Well, Lawrence? Larry?
Oh, don't call my dad Lawrence. He does not like that. No, it's Larry.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Whoa. No, it's Larry.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, very. And I tried asking him about it, and he didn't really want to even talk about it. No, it's Larry. Don't go there.
But his legal name is Lawrence, right? It's his legal name?
I don't know whether I'm speaking out of school. He'll probably get mad at me. But, like, I think he looked into changing it, but it was too big a pain. It's like, it's not worth it. But, like, he's Larry, not Lawrence.
Yeah.
Wow.
So don't go there. Yeah.
If we need to delete this, we can delete this.
You might have to. Okay. I still want to go home and, like, see my dad. Like, I want to keep my relationship with him. This will be the thing, right?
Yep.
I have a tendency in little side comments to get myself in a lot of trouble with people things that I don't think are necessarily going to go in that direction. Maybe I used the wrong word, et cetera.
Right.
I don't need that with my dad.
No.
It's one thing with people that I don't, like, know that well. It's another with my dad, who I really like.
Especially now. They've got a nice little Arizona place.
That's
like, you really don't want to screw it up.
I can't ruin that. I've got to use my parents for their place in Arizona, of course. Yes. That's how I'm thinking about it. Meanwhile, somebody out there is like, oh, Salk uses his parents. Typical Salk. Sheesh. Yes. Anyway. Yeah, Larry, I watched that whole thing happen. It was very... And it's funny because I've had all these people at my house because we just finished this home renovation. And, like, not one of them is like that.
No.
Like, that is not the Pacific Northwest at all. Like, even a little. Like, no one's had an angle on anything.
Nope.
The harder thing is more like the carpenter shows up and he had to meet someone. Like, he waited. 11 o'clock, he finally gets the information he needs and he's like, I gotta come back tomorrow. Like, it's 11. He's like, yeah, I can't do this today. I gotta finish it tomorrow. Like, you can't get the work done in the next how many hours? Like, it's 11 a.m. It's like, yeah, I gotta go for a hike.
Yep.
It's like, okay.
Not going to work today.
See you Wednesday. Yeah. Brock, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, anything.
If the Seahawks draft Malik Wylos at number 9, even though you don't think he's necessarily that guy, mm-hmm. even though I don't necessarily think he's that guy, will you be as excited as I am?
I don't know if I'd be as excited.
I'll be ecstatic.
You'd be ecstatic.
Yes, huh? And I don't think they should do it. I want to be clear. I don't think they should draft Malik Willis at number 9. I don't. I'm with you. Based on what I've read about him, seen the risk, etc., I don't think it's the right thing to do. But if they believe strongly enough mm-hmm. in this draft class with their roster, et cetera, with all their holes, all their needs, all the available tackles, DNs, corners, etc., if with all of that in play, they choose to draft Malik Willis at number 9, I'm all in. I'm all in on it. I will be jumping up and down excited that they got the next Lamar Jackson.
I can understand some of that sentiment, and especially from sports radio standpoint. And
no, it's not even that. It won't just be sports radio, I promise, because okay. I know what you're talking about. Like, hey, there's going to be something fun and exciting.
Okay.
Not that. All the right. fact that John Schneider, who for whatever faults he may have, identified Russell Wilson, identified Patrick Mahomes, by all accounts, identified Josh Allen, has an excellent eye mm-hmm. for premier quarterbacks. Not perfect. He liked Andy Dalton. He brought in Charlie Whitehurst. I'm not saying he's perfect, but John's got a really good eye for quarterbacks that move the needle, right? That mm-hmm. that change the interior temperature of the room. If John looks at this draft and the whole landscape out there and drafts Malik Willis at number 9, then he's all in, yeah. which case... I'm all in.
Okay. So 13 years ago, if we were doing this podcast and you were to ask me that and we were to walk through this, I think I would be equally yoked with you. I'd be like, yeah,
I am yoked. Thank you. I appreciate yeah. you saying so. I've been working hard.
Well, that was a biblical reference.
Oh, that yeah. kind of yoked. Uh-huh. Oh, yep. I thought you meant like an oxen. Super strong.
Like you and I, like an oxen plowing the Seahawk field. Like I'd be.
That is equal. Like us. Yes.
Yes. I would be so excited. But the problem is, after 13 years of spending time with you and Howdy and Kyle, my cynicism scale has gone from a 0, like an oxen, to, I don't know, a 40.
I know. That's my fault.
Yep, and I, you know, it's not your fault. I mean, no. It's just our relationship.
It's a little bit my fault.
Maybe a little bit. And I would, sadly, one of the first thoughts that would come to my mind, and maybe it's come to yours, or maybe it hasn't. Maybe your cynicism is now a 0, and you can be super excited, would be, wow, they're making that pick to buy time.
I don't think so, though.
They're making that pick. That's where
I'll disagree with that.
Okay, you can disagree, but that is unfortunately, as you presented that question, that's where my mind went. No. Like, okay, now they want to have a couple years.
I think the opposite is true.
They want their young guy. They're going to be able to say, "Hey, listen, you know, look at all these young guys. They struggle early, but we're going to build around them. So it's going to give us another year, 2-3 years to build this thing."
Totally disagree.
I hate that. That's my answer. I hate that. There's some of that.
Well,
that
then let me make you feel better. Let me make you feel better. If you're trying to buy time, you don't draft a quarterback this year. That's buying time. Because then you have a built-in, hey, we haven't looked for the quarterback yet. You're going to take an entire year without the quarterback, and then you'll look for it next year. You've bought yourself an additional extra year before you even need to take a risk on a quarterback.
Mm.
Honestly, I think the opposite of what you just said is true. If they identify Malik Willis and number 9 and draft him, not in the second round. This is not true of a second round pick. But if you identify someone at the number 9 pick, a top 10 pick, pull the trigger and get him as your quarterback, you're not buying any time. You're starting the clock. Exactly the opposite.
Interesting.
That's the clock started. The clock on Pete and John. And I don't mean to say they're going to get fired. That when I say starting the clock on their tenure, that it sounds worse than I really mean it.
Go well, when you're searching for a franchise QB, the clock is starting.
Yes. No, you get it. I think you can capably look at your boss and say, this is not the year. Next year is the year. No one believes this is a great quarterback class.
Mm-hmm.
Baker Mayfield, if you've decided just he's not that guy, there's no one else out there and available. If you look at the landscape and tell Jody Allen, hey, Jody, I'm sorry. This is not the year to be drafting a quarterback. He's not out there this year. Next year, Brock, this is literally your argument. Yeah. You said next year there's going to be 3 of them maybe. Okay.
Yeah.
Give us this year to build up the roster. And then next year we'll find the quarterback.
Okay.
You've saved yourself a year.
That makes me feel a little bit better. Let me go to the arbiter of cynicism and equally yoked and oxen. Howdy.
You can convince me on both of your arguments.
Yeah.
I think you can absolutely convince me on both
of your arguments.
Howdy's
been nodding really hard over
both
here.
Of you, for yeah. both of your points, because I agree you can paint a picture both ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is not cut and dry one way or the other, whether you make that pick at nine with a quarterback or not. You can sell me the same story. Yeah, we're pushing it out of you. We're pushing it out 2 years, because ultimately, Pete and John and this whole thing, this whole plan is going to take at least 2 years to figure out whether it's even on the right track or not.
Yep.
So, mm-hmm. like... No matter but what you do now.
But don't you think the clock, I hate to say it this way, is there a better way to say the clock on them starts? Like the decision-making process on how is the Pete and John regime doing post-Russell, that decision is going to be based primarily on who they get to be their next real quarterback option. I don't believe that's Drew Locke or Geno Smith, and if they're staking their career on that, God love them. Yeah. But once you decide, okay, this is my guy, go... That's when we start analyzing whether or not they're truly doing the right thing for the Seahawks.
Because you're coming from a place where we don't know what the plan is, not evident. The
right.
plan of what they want to do is not evident. But once it becomes evident, then you do start watching, okay, now how long is this supposed to
and
take?
And what if you draft Malik Willis at nine? You don't play him much this year. Right, you let him sit behind Drew Locke and Geno Smith, who are, for whatever their faults are, professional quarterbacks, and you use your 2 second-round picks to build that up. You now still have 2 first-round picks next year, one of which is probably going to be high, like a really good pick if you're not even playing him next year. Like, mm-hmm. you could start talking me into
you
that
could,
as being
yeah,
a pretty good
could.
Point. Now,
yes.
I don't know if he's the right guy. I don't think he is.
Right.
But if they do, I'd fall in line. And, well, and the Lamar Jackson comp sounds real fun.
I think where you're on something, and I would agree with you, is there's a lot of criticism. And when you're a general manager in any sport, especially in an NFL draft, that is a total pick'em crapshoot as you study numbers and analytics and everything else. The one area that John has been pretty darn good, and we know this behind the scenes as well, and this is not just after the fact talk and armchair quarterback. Those names you referenced were guys he targeted. He loved Josh Allen. He loved Patrick Mahomes. He loved Russell Wilson. Those were the guys. So if at number nine, he loves and he truly loves Malik Willis, I'd be blindsided because it would be counter to everything that I have heard over the last few months, mm-hmm. both internally and externally. So it would be yet again another, oh my gosh, these Seahawks do an unbelievable job of keeping everything in house. And you have absolutely no idea when that name gets called, Jordan Brooks, Bruce Irvin, LJ Collier, all the way back to James Carpenter. You have no idea what their thought
is. You literally didn't even know who James Carpenter was when they drafted him.
No, where was I? I was in a hotel room.
Were you at the draft or something?
No. Was I back east?
I don't know. I just remember calling you and you were
yes, I was. I know. I was in. Yep. I was in the hotel across the street. I think it was a Clarion at that time before it's been updated.
Oh, the one that smelled like dead bodies across from
yep.
Bristol. Oh yeah, that place is gross.
Yep. And I'm in there, and
it
you
did.
Call. Oh yeah. I can't wait. Here's the pick. I don't know. Let me Google search him for a second. I had 150 other guys, but I did not have Big James Carpenter.
Remember
as
Nick Saban? It was like I think they got the wrong guy. Like
yep.
he thought they drafted the wrong dude from his offensive line. And yes. for whatever it's worth, Carpenter ended up being a decent pick. Not great. Not a great. He was not
a decade
home run,
in the league.
But he was a good pick.
Starter.
By year four, he was
dude,
okay.
He was. He ended yeah. up being a good pick.
It
not
took
a
while.
Not a great pick, but a good pick. Certainly yep. better than we thought it was going to be that night. Like on the John Schneider ledger, he's probably more in the positive camp than the negative. But,
well, when you play 10 plus years in the league,
yeah.
the numbers tell you you're pretty good.
I'll tell you what, if you could get a year three James Carpenter to be your guard right now and people mover, like probably sign up for that.
Yes. I think he also came into the league, did he not, during the strike or holdout or the
CBA? That might have been that year. Yeah.
It was, and he had a lot of mac and cheese. He was a big boy. He did. He loved his mom's cooking, and he was like 380 pounds. He was a big old boy that had to slim down, and that was a lost season. But, yeah, to your point, to get back to it, if they take Malik Willis at nine, that's because they think he's Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They think he's Josh Allen.
Yeah.
They think he's that guy.
Lamar Jackson.
Yep. Well, even Lamar was, the last pick of the first round?
But he's been an MVP of the league. I just mean that's sort of the comp with him, right? Is that, and not that he's, I don't think he's got the twitchiness of
no,
Lamar.
He doesn't.
I mean, anybody does. Lamar Jackson is so fun, by the way.
There's been no QB like him. Michael Vick's the only thing
he's
close.
The only one.
Yep.
We don't talk enough about how, I'm not saying he's the best quarterback in the league. He's not. We don't talk enough about how cool and fun Lamar Jackson
yep.
is.
Agreed.
He's the most fun player in the NFL.
Agreed.
How about that?
And I The Tyreek Hill, John Morant, if you were in
who?
NFL.
Who did you
John
just say?
Tyreek Hill.
Oh, Tyreek Hill. But he's not fun.
He's pretty fun.
Despicable guy. Not fun.
Yeah.
Like, because of his off-the-field issues, I can't find... I'm not saying he's not a great player, but I don't find him fun.
I'm going to say John Morant.
John Morant would be. He's not in that league.
Doesn't matter. Like, he still is. He's still the most fun. Even, can you imagine if he were a receiver? It's just...
Where does that dunk stand on your list of cool things you've seen in basketball? That was ridiculous, the dunk he threw down.
He is cat quick like Iverson.
Yeah.
But he jumps like Dominique I mean, it's insane.
That's a good comp. A little Iverson and a little Dominique together.
Oh,
he's awesome and just seems like a fun, cool, I'm not actually watching the games, but I'm legitimately rooting for the Memphis Grizzlies because of him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And by the way.
Yeah. He got me to watch a whole NBA game this year, Brock.
Yep. And to your excitement level, like for Kurt and me and a couple of the other fellows going to be working the preseason games this year, they'd be off the charts if Malik were in that position.
So tell me a little bit more about him. No one has Lamar Jackson's, acceleration? That's the thing to me that he does.
It's quick
so
twitch.
Turnover,
I mean, unbelievable speed. Gets from first to fifth gear as quick as any position player in the league.
So
I mean, truly, like Tyreek and Waddle, there's a few of them, but he goes from first to fifth as well as anybody in the entire NFL.
So tell me, and he can throw it, by the way. I mean, like, he's definitely improved. I think he can. I like him a lot. Whatever. Tell me more about Malik Willis.
Concerns?
No, tell me about why he's great first.
Why
stop,
he's great?
Stop with your concerns. You're such a negative Nelly. Gosh. Tell me about why he's great.
I mean, he's just a dynamic athlete. 6 foot, 220, would have probably run 4.4, 4.5 at the combine. Powerful arm, incredible velo.
Wait, just put that 4.4, 4.5 into context. What would Lamar Jackson run if he ran it? I don't know if he did or not, but
he did not run it. He would have been low 4.4s, but Lamar is just his first 20 would have been, he'd have been two steps ahead of Malik. Even if they both ran 4.4,
got it.
Malik would have caught him, but the first 20, Lamar is just so unbelievably quick.
Okay.
He is by all accounts, a tremendous guy. Not just because he gave his combine gear to a homeless guy in Indy. I happen to know Hugh Freeze a little bit and over the years and Hugh just raves about him as just, he doesn't think he's anything special. Got a tremendous humility, treats people great. And I think that is a pretty critical quality at that position. Do you think you're bigger than other people? Do you think you should be treated differently than other people? Or are you going to come in and be humble and work alongside them? And you know, so those would be the plus attributes, plus personality, plus character, plus arm, plus power, speed. Those would be all the plus traits that are likely going to get him drafted in the first round. And we'll see. We'll see if somebody in a different position than the Seahawks are in says, yeah, yep, that's the guy that I want to build around and we'll come up and trade for him around 10, 9, 8, or, you know, I don't think Carolina's taking him at 6. I think there's too many other talented people.
What about just the on-field ability? Like, where does he shine? Is it just in the running game? I mean, no, tell me more about him as a passer.
Yeah, no, he shines on the deep ball because it's effortless, right? It's a hand grenade. It's easy out of his hand. He's free and easy. So when he sees it and he feels it and he's locked in, he's going to throw a seam route as well and with as much velo as just about anybody in the league. I mean, certainly top 5, top 10 in the NFL, if it's Matthew Stafford, if it's Aaron Rodgers, if it's Russell, if it's Josh Allen, if it's those guys that, you know, are at the very, very top as far as exit velo. I mean, his exit velo is going to be top 10. I don't know if he's there, but he's top 10 when he sees it and he feels it and he's confident and he lets it rip. Mm-hmm. So there's really in, you know, he can make every throw. Yeah. A lot of guys can do that. But he does it with an exit velo that's the most powerful in this class. Like Pickett, Ritter, Corral, Sam Howell, none of them have the exit velo. I kind of like saying that out of his hand.
It feels good.
It does. It feels
sounds
good.
Good.
Yeah, I don't hear other guys say that.
No, it sounds good. I like that.
Good. Yeah. So those would be all the strengths. Those would be all the pluses.
How is he? So in the Pete Carroll idea of a quarterback, right, hand it off a whole bunch, I'm sure he can do that, and he adds to the running game with the read option and everything else. Can he He throws the deep ball well off play action, I would assume. Another big Pete Carroll plus. Yep. How will he be in more of the Shane Waldron stuff that's come from the Rams system?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think any quarterback is can flourish in that system and likes that system. And Jared Goff flourished in it with a very minimal skill set when you have answers, right? In gimmies, like I said to you last year, leading into the season. It wasn't really until the month of December that we started to see those gimmies take shape. Like, oh, give me that, give me that, give me that completion, give me that first read, give me that first read, give me that first read. And that's a plus of that system. With the run and the play action, the movement, you should have more gimmies than a Mike Martz seven step, gotta see it, read it, process it, throw it just on time, West Coast system where you gotta progress 1, 2, 3, 4, perfect rhythm, perfect timing. So there should be more gimmies in that system. Matthew Stafford obviously benefited from that with you know, some of the weaponry too. So yeah, I think it would be a system that would be comfortable for his skill set.
Okay.
A few things that are uncomfortable for me. Really bad in the fourth quarter. Like his splits. And you know what? I went and looked at all these guys last night, did a little research knowing that QBs, we're going to be a conversation. And I was like, gosh, I'm trying to figure out why these guys don't move my needle. And you go through all of them, Mike, and their fourth quarters, their third downs, their splits, not what you're looking for. Like, I want the fourth quarter to be your best quarter, right? That's winning time. And splits wise, like Desmond Ridder for both Malik and Desmond, their fourth quarters were their worst quarters.
So what you're saying is rougher in the fourth quarter, trouble on third downs. They sound like Russ for the last year and a half.
Yeah, not for 8 years though.
No, but for the last year and a half.
And not when he came into the league.
And that's sort of the point I mean. Like, yes, I want those things are very important. And Russ was tremendous at it for 8.5 years. Last year and a half, you just described him.
To a degree. I mean, when healthy last year, December, he's pretty good.
Some issues in the fourth quarter. Pretty good. Third downs.
52% passer in the fourth quarter. 2 touchdowns, 3 picks.
Who's that?
That's Malik Willis.
In college?
In college.
I don't like that.
At Liberty.
At Liberty.
Going up against some sisters of the poor.
Don't like that.
Right?
Don't like that.
Okay.
Another little thought I had, and I actually texted Jeremiah and Joel and a few other people and just trying to figure out. And again, this is precedent and precedent can be broken. And this is a different game today than it was 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And we're certainly going to see even more and more and more guys transfer. 32 NFL starting quarterbacks last year. There were 5 guys in college that transferred, but they all transferred big to big. Joe Burrow went from Ohio State to LSU. Justin Fields went from Georgia to Ohio State. Obviously, Russell went from NC State to Wisconsin. They all went big to big. I reached out to those guys thinking, gosh, who was the last guy, stud, that transferred down? Now, they're still Division I, right? Liberty has come into Division I football here over the last couple years, but the competition is not. Yeah, and it's the lowest Division I there is. Like, who is the last one that had done that? And I think it's Flacco. But Flacco didn't even necessarily play. I think he was like a Michigan commit and
right.
transferred to Delaware and became a first-round pick. There may be others. Those guys couldn't really drum it up. I couldn't find many others. But that's a little bit of a, you know, just a precedent concern. Okay. He could break that barrier, and in the right fit, in the right place, he may. But when there's not been another, or the 5 guys that are currently starters all transferred, Kyler Murray would be the other one, right? From A&M to Oklahoma, and Baker Mayfield. I counted him as a starter because he has been the last few years. He went from Tech to Oklahoma. So those would be the 5. But there's not been one that had to step down
right.
in competition to put themselves and elevate themselves to a first round. So there's a few thoughts.
Wait till Jake Haener's a first rounder next year.
Yeah, could be.
By the way, is that a real thing? I saw his name thrown up on a list of like big name quarterbacks coming out next year.
Yep.
Is Jake Haener going to be a first round pick?
I don't think he'll be a first round pick. I think he's just too limited.
Okay.
But if he throws for another 4,000 yards with Jeff Tedford and 40 touchdowns and 7 picks and, you know, wins 10, 11 games, wins the Mountain West, wouldn't be shocking. I mean, it wouldn't be outside of the realm of possibility of QBs in this day and age playing in speed and space and shotgun and doing everything. He's got pretty good feel, too. Very, very accurate guy. But
if that happens, Brock,
yeah.
they should fire Jimmy Lake again.
I feel like you've said that on the podcast last year.
No.
Yes.
If that happens, he should get fired a second time. I'm if Jake sure Haener ends up being the, a first round pick in the NFL, that he should get fired again.
Well,
somebody should retroactively fire him again.
The problem is it wasn't Jimmy. That was Chris.
Oh, that was Chris? Yeah. Well, then he should step down again.
Okay.
That whoever. Sorry, I thought that was Jimmy. That was Chris?
That was Eason, remember? Yeesh. That was Eason. And, That's bad. And I think that ultimately led to Chris walking away.
Yeah, going, I don't like that.
I didn't like that at all.
All right, okay. So that's Malik Willis. You got two or three, maybe even four other guys. I asked you this week about Kenny Pickett because no one's even mentioned him, and I think it's just because of his teeny little hands.
Yep.
Like, I can't do a guy with small hands on my team. No thanks.
Doesn't he have the same size hands as Patrick Mahomes?
No. I think he has hands
like a little smaller.
Howdy. He can barely grip a ball. It's very small. It's like a little baby hand.
That's terrible.
I don't know if that's actually true. I'm just kidding. But he did measure with small hands. And that is, I know it sounds ridiculous to talk about. Obviously, I'm kind of making fun of it. But that's kind of a thing. Like, it's really hard to play quarterback, especially in rough weather, if you don't have big enough hands.
Yep. And if you're in the Pacific Northwest, you're going to deal with some moisture. Now, he's handled it in Pittsburgh and practicing up there and playing up there. And he's done it with a littler football. College football is smaller than an NFL ball. As I said to you this week, my challenge with him is he's just a one-year wonder. For 4 years, he was a sixth or seventh round pick. You know, Joe Burrow was also a one-year wonder. But he wasn't a guy for 4 or 5 years. He sat there and looked at athletically, size, giftings, and went, yeah, he doesn't have it. For 4 years, people were like, yeah, late round pick, maybe preferred free agent. And then this year just absolutely explodes. He explodes because on third down, by the way, he was awesome. 67%, 11 touchdowns, no picks. Awesome on third downs. He can run it a little bit, 20 career rushing touchdowns. But a little bit like these other guys, his fourth quarter is terrible. I mean, it's in winning time when it matters in the NFL, and I'd sure love to see those guys in college be difference makers when it matters the most. And very few of these guys in this class were that. I don't think he's a fit for the Seahawks. I'll be curious. I think most, if you looked at most boards, white boards all around the NFL, if you got a sneak peek in 32 war rooms today, I can't imagine he'd have a grade higher than 20, right? I think he's probably in the 20s for some.
All right, so let's wipe it. I can't imagine the Seahawks doing that. Of course, that means they'll probably do it. But let's take Kenny Pickett out of here.
So if they took him at 9, would you have the same excitement?
I would have to. Yeah. I mean,
you'd have to be consistent.
Philosophically, as a philosophical guy, philosophically, I have to do it.
I'll just say this. Philosophically, I should. In reality, it would be harder for me to work up the same level of excitement.
Yeah.
And partly because
what was that song? Was that song Baby Shark or Baby Hands? What was it?
Baby Shark. Yeah. And not just because of the hands. Just the thing is, it would be at this point, honestly, it's hard for me to work up any excitement for any quarterback that is not dual threat.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me to work up. And I know that there's plenty of good quarterbacks in the NFL that throw almost all, not just throw first, but that's all they do.
Well, the two in the Super Bowl.
I'm aware. It would still, it's hard for me, not impossible, but it would be hard for me to overcome a now significant bias I have against quarterbacks who can't run.
Well, not even a bias. It's the, you got to watch a wizard for a decade.
Yeah, it's more fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
And like, I'm not saying those guys can't win. They're not as fun. Yep. They're not as fun to watch. Yep. And as a fan, that's increasingly important to me, is making that guy fun to watch. And Kenny Pickett doesn't seem nearly as fun to watch as Malik Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that's why I'm a little bit in on Ridder and Corral. Not that either of them are necessarily running quarterbacks, but they both have a dual threat element to their game. And they both seem fun. They both seem to have a fun factor.
They do. They both have a little bit of charisma, a little bit of flair. I think Corral's got a little bit more. Desmond's a little more than the Russell Wilson. Up at 5, grind, work, you know, machine.
Dude, up at 5. I've been up for an hour at 5 o'clock. Like, I'm already at work by then. I got no. I don't care about that. That's nothing to me.
57 touchdowns, 23 picks. I don't love that in college.
Who's that?
That's Matt Corral.
But hold on. You can't tell that story. You are so negative. You cannot tell that story of Corral without talking about his senior year.
Correct.
It was his senior year.
No, it was his senior year.
Okay.
Yep.
And what happened?
He sharpened it up.
How many picks did he have last year?
What do you have? Five?
Six. Five or six. Compared to like 12 the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, let's be fair.
Yep.
Guys do improve. You can't just look at the entirety of his tape.
100%.
And I will also say, now you know how much I hate interceptions. And I didn't watch every Corral game. In college, in college, I don't know that you can just point at interceptions as like the reason to, I don't know. It's, those guys are asked to do a lot of different things in college than they are in the pros. And sometimes they need to be more aggressive or their receivers stink or whatever. I don't know. I don't, as much as I hate interceptions, I'm not as down on it in college.
I would agree with that. But on the flip side, you also are not playing against elite defenses, elite DBs.
Good point.
You know, I mean, I think that cuts both ways.
Fair point.
The one thing I don't love, 4 of his 5 picks again in the fourth quarter. So he did improve. There's no question he cut that down. He took care of the football so much better. I love his voice. I think he's got tremendous charisma out of these five. I think he'd come in and you know, be what John and Pete want to have fun and be yourself and let, you know, just be a guy that is a little bit of a ringleader more than others. But 4 of his 5 picks in the fourth quarter, also very average in the red zone.
Do you know, did you go back, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, did you go back and see what the situations were for them?
No.
I mean, were they down 20 and desperately trying to come back?
I don't think so. I
because
mean,
those
good.
Are like, Ole yeah, Miss those is, happen.
Yeah. No,
or were Miss, they, sure. you know, tie game down 3, desperately, yep. you know, you're in the opportunity to win a game and you crush it, unfortunately.
Yep. I mean, four or five kind of speaks for itself. Like if you threw 5 all year, I don't think it was just, yeah, coming from behind and we'll throw up a punt here for field position. And you know, when you've had some fumbles and you've had some picks and you've had some of that ball security issue, you're going to be nitpicked on that. I also, you know, was curious just in the red zone. Like that. So I went back and just honestly, there's things that I do like about all of these guys. But as I told you on Monday leading into this, like I just, there's not really one of them. I'm like, yeah, I feel great. I like this. And usually there is in the draft class. And I do think some of this situational football is, I was just studying it last night. It's like, okay, maybe that's part of it. Like not great on third downs, not great in the red zone, not great in the fourth quarter, not when it matters, right? Not when I'm like, whoa, you know, the kid this year from Alabama that came on the scene, it's just CJ Stroud at Ohio State. Like, yeah, like when it mattered more times than not, they were awesome
is
and
it,
delivered.
How fair is it, though, just given the amount of talent those guys had on their team to make that comparison? And I'm not saying Ole Miss was bad. And I get it's not. But, OK, cool. Bryce Young shows up in the fourth quarter with like the 7 best wide receivers on the planet, an offensive line that gives him an hour and a half to throw.
Yep.
Like, okay. And now I know he's also going against SEC competition and he's got to play the Georgia defense with like 12 first round picks. And like, I get it.
Yep.
But you know, there's more
no
to that,
question.
Right? I mean,
no
like
question.
How much did Corral have to work with at Ole Miss? How much did Ritter have to work with at Cincinnati?
Did he not
elevate the heck out of those guys?
Sure did. They sure did. Not nearly as much as Ohio State and Alabama has as far as receivers. And
I got to tell you, man,
such.
If I was throwing a Chris Olave and Smith and Jigba and Garrett Wilson.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, I might put up some pretty big numbers.
Yep. And Marvin
I mean,
Harrison
I can't throw football,
Jr.
but if I could, like, yep. if I were throwing to those three guys.
Do you have baby hands?
No, I actually don't have small hands, but I can't throw football.
Okay.
Yeah, not well anyway.
Desmond Ridder and Sam Howell will be the last two. And again, Desmond, just his lowest rated quarter, much like Malik was the fourth quarter.
Do you think he would be thought of as a little bit higher prospect if he was Des Ridder?
He's just not so cool with the first name Desmond. It's not cool enough.
What do you think? I'm not making a statement. I'm asking a question. Uh-huh. If he was Des, D-E-Z, like Des Bryant, would he be a higher... Would you think more of Des Ridder than you do of Desmond Ridder?
Mm.
This maybe gets back to the Larry Lawrence thing. I don't know.
Maybe 10 years ago, I would have agreed with you, but you know the pendulum swung on that, and now being very official is very in. So, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I would have loved, speaking of elevating, and I know it was against Georgia when they were a year younger than they were this year when he got to face them in the Peach Bowl in Cincinnati. And I know this year it was Alabama. And so you're facing the best of the best. But I would have loved either of those games.
He's facing Alabama while he's at Cincinnati, and you're going to throw that in his face? That's not right.
He's got an NFL lineman. He's got an NFL running back. He's got an NFL receiver.
And they have 20 of them.
Yep.
Come on, that's not fair.
I don't know. I would have loved to have just seen something. Just move the needle a little bit. Just come on, make something happen in those moments. And I know it's uphill. And guess what? You're going to be playing in the league against Alabama and Georgia defenses
every week. You're going to have Alabama and Georgia offenses on your side.
You may, depending on where you go.
Well, come on, man. I mean, like, that's not fair to say. I mean, like,
yep.
The point is that there are a lot of NFL players on Alabama, Georgia, et cetera. Like, that's who's in the NFL, NFL players.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yep.
What if he was Desi Ridder? Probably even less likely. Now he's like a fourth round pick who maybe you're taking a chance on. I don't think so.
And if they take Sam Howell at number nine, are you going to be excited?
At number nine? Whoa. Dude, we're talking about 40 with these guys.
We're
not
talking
nine.
About the Seahawks. Hey, it's absolutely possible.
Do you know who Chad Reuter is? Did you see his Seahawks trade?
No.
Dude. Let me tell you.
Okay, give me some. Talk
Maura
to me.
Sent this to me last night, and I was dumbfounded.
Okay.
Did you find it, Howdy?
I haven't.
His mock has the Seahawks trading up from number nine to number four, giving up like a fourth rounder or something and next year's number one.
Okay.
In order to draft Matt Corral at number four.
No.
I swear to you.
No.
Unless Maura cut and pasted it wrong, that's what she sent me.
What?
Oh, what a reaction. What would, can you imagine if that happens? Not just taking Matt Corral at nine.
Right.
Trading up to take Matt Corral at four and giving up one of your first round picks next year.
Yeah. I think Bob on set with me will melt down.
I hope that happens, for that.
I think
if they draft a guy who is projected to go in the second round and you're not sure that he should even go there, if they trade up to take him at number four, please take out your phone and film Bob. Just do me a favor, because it'd be a terrible pick.
Will he be more mad than he was at Lefko the other day trying to take credit for the electric house?
That was very funny. Lefko's funny with that.
He is super funny.
Yeah.
And Bob was so mad.
No, he wasn't.
He was mad you and I tried to take the Legion of Boom. And say we were the ones that originated it when it happened on his show.
I disagree. And you are not going to bait me into talking trash about anybody today, I'll have you know.
Right.
I am on my best behavior. I am not talking trash about anybody, so don't even try to get me there. All right, you can beef up your business meetings. Maybe this would be good for War Room with Famous Dave's. Their famously sawsome catering is ideal when you just want your meeting or event to be delicious, to be memorable, to be stress-free. That's all anybody could want. You can customize for delivery, pickup, or full service. The Famous Dave's Q is designed to allow you to kick back and crush some classic Q, whether you're diving into a brief or digging into a brisket or getting ready for a draft. Just think about going whole hog on a little St. Louis-style spare ribs, cornbread muffins, Georgia chopped pork, all while nodding agreeably, as Howdy does, at a PowerPoint presentation, the dream come true. From their smoking starters and fresh salads to barbecue bundles and feasts, Famous Dave's slow-cook goodness is there to add a little flavor to your work schedule. You can get the full details at FamousDaves.com. All right, Brock, I still have more draft to talk. Today's going to be a very long podcast. I can already tell. We're taping a little early today. Let people behind the scenes here. We have a little extra time. I get the sense this is going to be kind of a marathon. That being said, we'll probably have like 2 minutes of conversation. But yeah, let's get out of here. But it feels like we still have a lot to get to. So more draft. Can we take a break from the draft?
Mm-hmm.
I want to come back. Howdy helped me come up with what I think is the best fan idea I've had in ages. So I want to run that by you. And Howdy helped me come up with this yesterday. And also, I want to talk through some other ideas for the Seahawks at number 9, 40, et cetera. But can we spend a little time on the first place matters? I mean, like, first place, as of press time, first place, best run differential in the American League, fourth best run differential in baseball, behind, like, the Dodgers, Giants, and Mets, I think it is. They're playing some really good baseball. They have the one kind of fluky, lucky win, which was Monday over the Rays, where the Rays kicked it around a little bit, which I think balances out their one fluky bad defensive loss, which happened against the Rangers last week, right? It probably could have been 8 of 9 homestand if it's not for a couple of weird J.P. Crawford errors. So let's say those two balance it out. Man, everyone I talked to Jeff Passan this week. I talked to Mark DeRosa this week. There's somebody, everybody asked, like, yeah, it's sustainable. They're not doing anything that's outside of their scope. Like, and if anything, You haven't gotten much from Winker, or at least not what you're going to get from him. You haven't gotten anything really from Kelnick. Julio still has plenty of growth ahead of him. You got nothing from Cal Raleigh. You have not gotten the full Robbie Ray experience, nor the full Marco Gonzalez experience. Flexen has been up and down. Well, you can make a case that they haven't even come close to playing their best baseball.
And, oh, by the way, your bullpen is human and gives up some runs and gives up some leads.
Yeah, without Seawald. I mean, look at it. Before yesterday, which was the 8-4 win, their starters had had an ERA of 3.12, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And their bullpen was 2.3. I mean, their bullpen gave it up a couple times, but those are still pretty filthy numbers.
They are, and they're still good, and they should be, and that was a strength of theirs last year, and I know bullpens are fickle, and you can never predict anything, but it's not like they've been nails.
But if you want to make that argument, which you're not necessarily wrong about, I'll also point out that Seawald's missed time. Sadler, well, he's not going to be here, but okay, that's one of their top relievers. Romo's not here, and Giles isn't here.
Correct.
So, yeah, they've given up a few runs because you've had to go to Johan Ramirez and not Billy Koch, whatever the guy's name, Matt Cook. But you're missing, let's call it three of your better leverage relievers, and it hasn't killed you.
Yep.
I mean, I make you a pretty strong case that the Mariners are better than they've been.
Well, you can make a case right now that the Mariners are who their record says they are at 11-6 in that run differential.
Or better.
That J.P. Crawford is sitting here at 1.5 war at this juncture of the season already. And Ty France as well is over one. I mean, those two have been arguably the best at their position in baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ty France is, when healthy, we have seen it for a year and a half, is a revelation. Is the best hitter on this team. J.P. Crawford was rewarded with his play from a season ago and is off to a tremendous start and actually adding some power components, playing pretty good defense. And oh, by the way, we said all of this, and we've not even mentioned the name Logan Gilbert, who I think has an ERA.
0.40.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Now, that's probably not sustainable. On the list of things that aren't going to last, Logan's probably going to give up more than one run the rest of this year, but okay, that one maybe is not as sustainable.
A whip
of
0.85, an ERA of 0.40, and 22 innings pitched. He has been absolutely nails, lights out at the most little pivotal stretch of this season when they had lost, four in a row? Mm-hmm. He was the stopper. Right, he was the one that went on the mound in the Windy City and put a stop to that. And then they came home and had a tremendous homestand. They've done it without Mitch Haniger, right? And Seawald, as you mentioned, with the IR list. They've done it without their manager. They've just, in every game you watch, most importantly, through nearly 20, you're like, yeah, this is a good team. This is a good team.
Yeah, look, can we address a few of those things? Because I asked a couple of those questions of Jeff Passan this morning, who no longer is the wet blanket. Howdy, you might have to make a new open for the warm blanket. Fuzzy blanket. Yeah. Or perhaps, this was a listener suggestion, what's Jesse Winker's thing?
The electric factory?
The electric blanket?
The electric blanket.
Wow.
My grandmother's favorites.
Wow.
Could he now be the electric blanket instead of the wet blanket?
Wow.
I don't know. You may need to
Are
think
you a
about
fan of
like
electric
that.
Blankets?
Personally, yeah. No, but they're not as bad as the weighted blanket. We've talked about that.
True.
How much I hate the weighted blanket that Heather has. That thing feels like it's going to kill me. I don't like it at all. It's very, very nerve-wracking, the electric blanket or the weighted blanket. But yeah. Can I run through a few? So I was asking Jeff about J.P. Crawford and trying to remember back, because I didn't really know of him when he was a big Phillies prospect. I'm like, okay, what was he supposed to be? And Jeff said, it's kind of what you're starting to see now. Not necessarily a ton of power, but a guy who would really get on base. And what's J.P. Crawford doing right now? Yeah, there's been a little extra power because he's hit a couple of home runs. He's on pace for 100 walks this year.
The power wasn't quite there because, I mean, even still, you know, well into his 20s, he's still a pretty lithe guy. You know, he's never going to be all muscled up. He's sort of like the wiry strong, if you want to use that term. And those guys, they don't come up with power, and they grow into it. And I think a perfect example of that, honestly, is Ketel Marte.
Then he goes on to talk about how the on-base percentage is there, and, you know, you're seeing that element of it, and obviously he's really gotten the glove. Jeff said top 10 in baseball, maybe not the top. I mean, maybe the Gold Glove was a one-year thing, but one of the better defensive shortstops in the game, certainly. Yep. This is, all right, maybe not an 1,000 OPS. That's a bit much for J.P. Crawford. But this may be pretty close to the real J.P. Crawford in his age 27 season where he's starting to figure it out. Is this the real Ty France? I mean, certainly we know that, I mean, he's not going to hit 400, but could he be a batting champion? Yes, he's got that kind of hitting potential. If he's starting to add the power, Brock, if he's mm-hmm. a 30 to 35 home run guy instead of an 18 home run guy, not impossible. And so then I asked him your question about whether or not they should extend him, and he was like, yeah, no. Which is, he makes a good point. Like, he's 27 years old now, so if you're, and he's got 3 years left under club control. So if you're buying him out of free agency years, they're like ages 31 and 32.
Mm-hmm.
And his point is you just don't need to buy out those years. I think I still might for a first baseman. Like, it's not like he's gonna, it's not like Haniger where he's not going to be able to play the field afterwards. Like, I could actually see see the value in doing that, but that was his answer.
Yeah, and I probably understand that from a nuts and bolts, but this is not just a nuts and bolts. This is not just the numbers. This is just, I think, for this team and this franchise to actually have guys, to have your own want to be here and turn that tide, turn that conversation. I know that's been a big point, and Howdy's probably, hopefully, nodding along. Can't see him right now, but you know, I know that's been a huge point of emphasis. You've got to change the narrative. You've got to change the tone and the tenor to have your guys want to be here. JP starts that process, and I think France would build on that. And the way that he hits, I said to you, I mean, I grew up watching Edgar Martinez,
mm-hmm.
and Edgar was unbelievably patient. They're built somewhat similarly. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and just their swing, he's long in the zone, makes great contact in this day and age too, that he gets to play in, not the era three decades ago that Edgar got to be doing what he's doing. Yeah. I think it's almost more for the intrinsic value of what it means that clubhouse and to Mariners fans and to turn that narrative that your difference makers do want to be a part of this program.
The Mariners have played 17 games as of today. Do you know how many walks they have as a team?
Mm-mm.
They have 78 walks as a team in 17 games. They are averaging 4.5, almost 4.6 walks per game.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Where is that in baseball?
I don't have that number off the top of my head.
It's way up
there.
I mean, they've got four or five guys that either have or are close to having more walks than strikeouts, which in today's game is just not a thing.
Now, granted, they've still struck out 136 times compared to 78 walks. I mean, like everyone in baseball.
When you have Julio Rodriguez and Jared Kelnick, that's going to happen.
It's definitely. But I was thinking about this after the kind of fluky 7-run inning they had, right, where it's all unearned. Like, you know, one of the reasons that they get the benefit of that is they put the ball in play. In that game, the Rays struck out 12 times. The Mariners struck out 6. If you can eliminate you're not going to eliminate all the strikeouts, but some make more contact, like some of these, like Ty France does.
They're number one
like
in baseball,
Crawford,
by the way.
In walks.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Dodgers, number two, 73.
That's a big
Padres,
thing.
Padres, Mets. I mean, the teams at the top are teams that are winning. Mets and Dodgers and Mariners.
And by the way, you haven't gotten anything from Haniger in over a week, and he's one of your better hitters, certainly your best power hitter. Like, yeah, I think I can write you a script, Brock, where this team is not as good as they're going to be, which is scary. They've been really, really good at 11-6 against,
and by the way, they're
pretty good competition.
They're 136 strikeouts.
Yeah.
24th.
Yeah.
Like seventh best in baseball.
It's great.
So, yeah, I mean, both of those, they're doing what they said they were going to do and they put out to do, and that was to control the zone and to bring people in that can control the zone. And that's what J.P. Crawford has certainly grown into. I think that's been a natural for Ty France. Your young guys are still learning that. I mean, that is one of Kelenic's strengths. I do think he has a pretty good eye. And obviously, Julio is getting both robbed and, you know, learning on the way up through 17 games.
Where,
but, man, what a great start.
Where are you in the fun factor right now with this team? Like, last year was the fun differential thing, right? Like, where are you in terms of fun watching them?
Yeah, you know what? It just, gosh, in even having this conversation, I think, helps. And you said sustainable in all these baseball terms, but they just feel genuine. They just feel genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Winker's a genuine guy. It doesn't feel made up. Like, some of the stuff over the years, you wonder, like, you know, well, let's pinch Ichiro. Let's tickle him. Oh, let's have some little fun. Like, it just felt somewhat contrived at times. This all feels pretty genuine. Mm-hmm. Frazier's a pretty genuine dude. And Julio's genuinely joyful. And Ty France is a genuine hitter. And JP genuinely wants to be the leader. And, right, Robbie Ray genuinely wears tight pants. And they just, I don't know, man. There's just a genuine factor to them.
So
I wouldn't say it's like off the charts fun, like, whoa, this is so incredibly fun. They have flashes of it, but I think more importantly,
yeah,
Mitch is still genuinely intense when he gets back into the
fold.
It's
funny, I wasn't going to go in that direction, although that's a good, I love your answer. I think that's a wonderful way of looking at this team. I was just sort of thinking of all of the must watch components of a game for me right now. Like, if Julio's up, it's must watch. I want to watch him. It doesn't mean he's going to come up with a home run every time. In fact, he didn't have one yet, but it's must watch for me every time he's up. I know Kelnick has not delivered on what he's expected to do yet. I'm not telling you he's been great. It's must watch for me every time he's up because I'm waiting for that to happen. And the game where he hit the trip, like, you're seeing just the little pieces of like what it can be if Kelnick puts it together. The hustle, the grit, the like all of it, the speed. Like, I really, really, really want Jared Kelnick to put it all together. He's must watch for me. Ty France, when he's up, is must watch for me. Matt Brash is must watch for me. Logan Gilbert is must watch. Robbie Ray. Like, mm-hmm. When Matt Brash, I have to watch it. Dude, I just want to watch that slider. Like, I want to see 96 with the slider from hell. I want, and I haven't even mentioned Andres Munoz. Tell me he's not must watch. Doesn't mean he knows where the ball's going all the time, but he is must watch television for me if he's on right now. By the way, I don't know if you got a chance to watch them in Tampa for the first game, the strikeout he had of Wander Franco. Did you see that?
The swing was...
The ball ended up behind Franco. Correct. It moved like 40 Correct. Inches from right to left. It's not supposed to happen when you're also able to throw 103.
Correct.
Sheesh. When does this end, by the way?
Pretty filthy. When does what end?
The velocity. Where does it end? 110? Like, what are guys going to, like, where does the human body stop being able to throw it any harder?
That's every sport, every track, everything.
Right.
It always trends to more and more and more. So I don't know.
Where do you think it ends?
I don't think it does.
I mean, eventually it has to.
So
it
Titus.
200 miles an hour one day? I mean, come on. No.
Eventually.
Stop.
Titus is in sixth grade, right?
Yeah. He's only throwing 102.
And he goes to this place called Throwformance. And, you know, he's got a little later start than some of these other kids that start like in second
he's
grade.
He's got a later start?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. So he's got a kid in his school that he looks up to, big kid, like 6'2", 6'1", seventh grader. And this kid's going this weekend to a perfect game tournament, got invited. Why? Because as a seventh grader, he's throwing 81 miles an hour. Is a seven,
Sheesh.
Is a
14 years old.
Yes, at 14. At 14. They're throwing 80 miles.
I don't even really know
miles.
What to do about that.
What's that?
I don't even really know what to say about that.
Correct. So, you played high school baseball, didn't you, Salk?
I did.
Yeah. There, if you saw a kid in high school throw 80, you're like, wow, that's pretty
fast. Kid's throwing hard. Yeah. Those are the kids that got drafted.
13 and 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, you know, at this Throwformance place, the instructor was kind of saying to the kids, like, yeah, if you can't throw 90 in high school, you're not getting looked at.
So crazy.
You're not getting looked. You're not even going to get a sniff.
So I mean, are guys going to start throwing 105, 110?
Probably.
They probably are.
I think 105 is a very realistic in 10 years.
Yeah.
When that kid is in seventh grade.
When you and I were growing up, Brock, I mean, like, anybody who threw 95 was like, whoa, ridiculous flamethrower.
Correct.
Hits 95. Like, Clemens was that guy, right? Randy Johnson was that guy.
Remember watching Pedro Ramon Martinez.
Like, yeah. Pedro 95. Got it up to 97 occasionally.
Yes. And it was like superhuman.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh, it was so loud. It hits the glove and it is just whistling.
You also had that changeup.
Yes.
Dude. So it was so good.
Yes.
But now it's like 95. Oh, so kind of a soft tossing lefty only throws 95. Like,
correct.
It is really remarkable what's happened to the game of baseball in those regards.
Yep. No, it'll be 105. And in a few years, we will see 105. And I think in 10 years, we will see many, many, many guys throwing, 105 miles an hour. Crazy.
All right, back to the draft here, because we're creeping up on this thing rapidly. We're not really creeping. We're rapidly accelerating now towards the draft. Howdy and I were talking about what you do for draft night if you're not in this business. Like, I mean, when you're in the business, you're obviously you're taking notes. You're Maura told me, did you hear Maura this morning?
No.
She's like heart, she gets the draft guide out. She's writing down everything like she's
a baseball scorecard.
Yes. She's very studious about the NFL draft. But I was thinking, if you're not in the business, like anybody who's listening to this podcast, wouldn't the draft be a better party event than the Super Bowl? Howdy was mentioning how he and his buddies used to get together for the draft every year and kind of make it a whole thing.
We did baseball or football and basketball. We would get together. We have draft parties. We would get a bunch of snacks. We would have our iPads out and our phones out. We'd have a couple of different screens. We might take a Madden break. We'd go out and play basketball out in the yard.
Well, I was thinking, first of all, I think it's a great idea. But like more than that, the problem with Super Bowl parties is like, the Super Bowl is interesting from start to finish. You've got the game, the commercials are part of it. Like, it's hard to talk, and everything that's going on is sort of a distraction from the game. The draft was literally made for 30 seconds of action every 10 minutes.
Yes.
There's tons of opportunity for, let's go get some food, let's go play, shoot some hoops, or do it. Like, why don't people have huge draft parties? It seems like it would be a much better excuse for it.
Maybe they do. I think a lot of people do.
I've just never been invited to one. Nobody likes
maybe
me.
Maybe so. I don't know. Well, you're a late comer to the draft, though, too. The draft
hasn't always
been the biggest thing for you.
Not the biggest, but I've always watched the draft.
Howdy, remember when you and Kyle came to my house and watched draft that year? That
was not invited. I was not there.
But don't you think, I don't know, maybe a Thursday night doesn't help it, right? Yeah. It used to be on Saturday. It's never really been Saturday. Saturday night event.
No, it's Friday night, Saturday morning for a long time.
But if they did have the draft on a Saturday night or something like that, it wouldn't be great for the like talking about it the next day, but it would be great for people to have draft parties. Like that would be a fun reason to do all the stuff you do now for the Super Bowl.
Agreed. Built for it.
Yeah.
Like just the ups and the downs and you know the timing and you're on the clock and
I guess you could do a Thirsty Thursday kind of draft party or something like that. But
I mean, remember that draft party we went to together?
Dude, it was fun until the Seahawks traded back six times and everybody left mad. Yeah, it was great.
That was awesome.
Ended up with Malik McDowell the next day.
Thousands of people down there.
There were
thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah.
And it was, okay, here we go. They're on the clock. Right, everybody's trade down. Okay, they're on the clock. Trade down. Okay, one last shot out of here in the first round. Everybody be ready. Cameras are on.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're getting ready now for an actual draft. Seahawks are at number 9. I spent a while telling you I don't think they should take Malik Willis, but if they do, look out. I'm going to be his biggest fan. I can't wait. I think that the most important position after quarterback is defensive end. And if you have an opportunity to take Jermaine Johnson at number 9, I think they should do that. I don't know if he'll be available. He probably won't be. But they should take him if he's available at number 9. I'm too enamored with 70 tackles, 18 for a loss, and 12 sacks. And just does it all at the defensive end spot. I'm too enamored in that.
Yep.
But that's not necessarily my favorite draft scenario because I think, Brock, you can get there will be better offensive tackles available at 9, and I don't love the look of the offensive tackles available in the second round.
Yep.
Versus if you can get one of the premier offensive tackles in the first round, I like the sound of some of the defensive ends, whether it's David Ojabo from Michigan or tell me the guy's name from
Nick
Minnesota.
Nick Benito or Boye Mafe from Minnesota.
Yes, those three guys. I mean, like those are three that could be available in the second round. It's hard for me to say that Jermaine Johnson plus second round tackle is a better combo than one of the first round elite tackles and one of those other second round defensive ends.
I would tend to agree with that. So if it is not Malik Willis at 9, and I don't think it will be, is it Jermaine Johnson or would it be Ikem Ekwonu or?
Yeah, I think I'm probably on the Ekwonu or even trading back a couple for Penning. I don't know how you feel about that, but I'm in the zone where if you can get a premier. Now, I don't know how they feel. I've heard up and down on Neal. I've heard up and down on Cross. Right. People like him. People don't like him. Work ethic concerns. Work ethic's great. Great in pass blocking. Not so good at run blocking. Like I've heard some of these concerns about those guys.
Yeah.
But if you can get an elite offensive tackle at 9, I think that's probably the home run.
OK, here's where I think it'd be fascinating. And I hope in my lifetime, by the way,
super boring.
I hope in my lifetime.
For the record.
If they take a tackle.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do, but super boring.
Yeah. I've thought about this in my lifetime. I've got to experience some incredible sports stuff, right? Not seeing a World Series. That would be an absolute blast, especially if and when the Mariners can get there and win it. I mean, it would just be unbelievable to be in that stadium and to witness it. I know you've been around a few of them, Salk. Obviously, Super Bowls and national championship games and Rose Bowls, and got to see a bunch of stuff. Sonics when they were really good in the playoffs for years and years. Got to see a lot of things. I think of what's left on my bucket list. Got to see the Masters, right, last year. Unbelievable. I would love to sit in a war room. I hope at some point in my lifetime I would get that experience to just it's a fascinating crucible, right? Just to watch it and to see, you know, and obviously we know some people that have gotten a chance to do it, and most of them don't downplay it. They do say it's a little more business than you think, that there's not as much emotion and back and forth. I hope I get to witness it. Mm. And I do think sitting at number 9, where John and Pete could have a little bit of a conversation and a little bit of a debate, if this guy's still sitting there at 9, Kayvon Thibodeau. Because
but you've been as down on him as anybody.
Because he is a Pete Carroll dude.
Right.
Number one dude out of high school. Unbelievably talented. When it's on, it is on. And he can't be blocked. And he is 260 pounds, and he does run 4.5.
Jadeveon Clowney 2.0.
And if anybody thinks that he can change somebody's motivation level, it's Pete.
And he's a Southern California kid, right? Been out on the West Coast. And just, like, I could just see Pete just in John's ear.
Salivating.
Yes. Like, now, John, he's 6'5". He's 250.8. He ran 4.52.
He
benched 225 27 times. Mm-hmm. Now, John, Pete, settle down. Now, John, Pete, settle down, okay? That would be the one.
Thankfully.
Honestly, of all of the prospects in this draft, even more than Sauce Gardner, because I don't know how those two sides would feel about that. But I could see that one being the one. Like, they've convinced Pete over the last 2 weeks, Pete, we're not taking him. Are you? You understand?
It's not going to happen. Don't worry.
When we get to the war room, we're not changing him. And
he'll
Pete's
be gone.
Just in there bouncing, chomping his gum like John.
He won't
John.
Be there.
Huh?
Won't be there. Won't be there. Won't be available. Will not be available at 9.
Let me see what Vegas is
put it on the
thinking.
Board right now.
And by the way, Vegas.
These guys will. Brock.
Vegas
Brock,
is on board with you. Hold
Brock,
on a second. What?
Lawrence Phillips gets 25 chances in the NFL. They will take talent over everything else every single time.
Ooh,
somebody
Vegas,
will take him before 9.
Vegas agrees
be there.
With you, by the
won't
way.
Won't be there.
Jermaine Johnson, over under, 9.5.
Yeah. Might be there.
Kayvon Thibodeau, according to Vegas.
4.5.
5.
4.5.
Yeah, no chance. He will not be there. Don't even worry about that. They won't have to make that decision.
Bunch of your tackles are all sitting there at 5.5,
yeah.
6, even Charles Cross, 6.5.
Can you help me out with one other little problem I have in the draft?
Okay.
So I told you what I want, right? I told you I want defensive ends the most important. I love Jermaine Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive tackles, probably what they should do because of the defensive ends you could get in the second round.
Yep.
I'm not going to, I'd be super excited if it's Malik Willis, even though it's not what I want them to do. I don't really want a corner, even though I respect how much, you know, a playmaker that you've got with the two guys that are potentially there and Gardner and Stingley. You're going to have to talk to me a little bit more about Jordan Davis.
Okay.
Because of all the other, there's no one else that's really floated my boat. I know he's not perfect.
Yep.
But he's 340 some odd pounds. Of you cannot move him in the middle defensive tackle for a Seahawks team that is moving to a 3-4. Now,
correct.
You might need to help explain to me their version of the 3-4, because when I think of a 3-4, I think of Haloti Ngata or somebody like Vince
Ted
Wilfork
Washington.
Or Ted Washington just planting themselves in the middle of that defense and good luck.
Right.
Tell me a little more about Jordan Davis.
Jordan Davis.
I can't decide on this one.
Throws 105 mile an hour.
Defensive tackle out of Georgia.
He's 105 mile. He's what we just got done talking about with in the years to come. We're going to see 105 mile an hour fastballs. They said back in the day, like eventually we're going to see 300 pounders. And then they said, well, eventually we're going to see 350 pounders. And then they said, well, we're going to see 350 pounders that run 4.740. Like seriously, that's what was said 10 years ago. Like, no, you're not.
But that can't be real.
That's not humanly possible. That amount of mass can't move that fast. That just doesn't, that's not in the human biology.
But he did.
And here he did.
So why, Brock? Because defensive tackles who disrupt and have that kind of size and speed.
Because he had six sacks his entire college career because he did not have moves. When I reached out to David Pollock, who I trust on this, Georgia Bulldog, lives in Athens, former D lineman, knows the ins and outs and everything, was just like, yeah, super, super raw in getting to the
you
QB.
Can't teach him that?
I think you can, but there's just some guys instinctively, right, that have a little bit more. So can you teach Aaron Curry how to rush the passer? Well, Aaron's doing it now for the Seahawks, but that was not a natural thing for him, right? That was a stumbling block for him. Now, could Aaron Curry stuff a punch a ticket of a tight end in the mouth? Yeah, he could do that. You know, so what value is there? You know, way overvalued at number three in the draft was Aaron Curry. Jordan Davis, according to Vegas, 14.5. And that's kind of where you've seen him mocked. And everybody's put him where? Baltimore. Because can't you just see him in Baltimore like Haloti Ngata?
Yeah, but you know what I want? I want the guy who's mocked to Baltimore. They always pick the best players.
They get really good players.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
I mean, if you're mocking him to Baltimore, what you're telling me is that he's really good.
That's right. That's right. And he's going to do what Calais Campbell and Haloti Ngata have done for like 15 years there. And that's just stop the run.
Those
You're not going to run on
those guys. Pretty disruptive, though.
What's that?
I mean, those guys are pretty disruptive. And if you've got him in the middle doing that, I mean, how many sacks do you think Haloti Ngata got someone else by pushing the pocket, et cetera?
His name was Terrell Suggs.
Right.
And how many, to the Hall of Fame.
And how good was that Georgia defense? Now, I know they got great people everywhere on that defense, but
yes.
How many did, Javon Walker, is that the guy's name? How many did he pick up because of a dude like this guy just pushing the pocket?
So the
forward?
Question really becomes, how elite of a three-technique tackle
right.
is he? How elite?
Right.
Is he instantly one of the five best
defensive tackles? You could convince me that number nine is a perfectly good spot
for him.
You've been
building yourself with speed rushers on the edge as the Seahawks for the last 2 years.
Well, here's what you would have to do to answer that, Howdy. At number nine, you'd have to say, we, Clint Hurt, defensive line coach, now defensive coordinator, and with our personnel and people, we can develop him to be a one technique and a three technique. We can develop him to not just be a total
Isn't he already
supper.
A one?
He's a big one technique.
He's a nose tackle, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's what he does.
Yep. That is what he has done, what he has owned, what he's operated. He made everybody else better around him.
I love a good nose
tackle. And, oh my gosh, by the way, Dave Wyman might just be the most excited. For as excited as Dave Wyman would get about Cortez in front of him, he's going to be so geeked, as would be, by the way, a couple undersized linebackers. You want to protect Jordan Brooks, right? You want to make those guys even better, right? Do you want to see if your former Utah Ute in the oversized suit can play? Put that big butt in front of him at 360 pounds, devouring guard to guard, and you're going to make those guys better behind him.
Yeah, DeVea, right?
I'll tell you what, I couldn't be
that
mad.
Was actually, thank you, Howdy. Yeah. I was going to look up David Pollock's text to me.
It's a pretty good comp.
That was exactly who he said. He said he's Vita Vea.
If he's Vita Vea, he's worth taking a nine. Right?
I mean, Vita Vea has helped Tampa Bay be the number one rush defense in the league, helped win a Super Bowl.
The only argument you could make against it is you've got pretty good guys up front that already do that, right? I mean, you could make the argument Al Woods and Puna Ford are good at that. But
55 years old.
And they're also not big enough necessarily in a 3-4 to play the middle.
Yep.
I'm not like opposed to this idea, man. I got to tell you, like the more I think about it, I'm not telling you it's the move. And I know I'm sort of spreading myself very thin. There's a lot of things I like. I'd be happy with Jermaine Johnson, although I think that it's probably not my choice because of what you can do in the second round. I'd be ecstatic about a tackle, although it's so boring. I would be pumped about Malik Willis, even though it's not what I think they should do. I'd be a little, I don't really like the corners. I just don't like going corner at that part of the draft.
Me too. I would agree with that.
But this has been like, this is my late mover like ideas. Like, why have I been ignoring this dude? He's a monster.
Yes. Yeah, and he's fun too. He's got a big charismatic smile to him.
I like that.
He's got energy. He's got some bounce. Like he's not just won't say anything. He's got kind of a cool story. Loves his mom. Like He loves his mom.
I hope most of these guys love their mom. Like I hope that's a fairly common trait amongst NFL players. I think most people love their mom.
Okay. I think it is.
I'm glad you put it in there, but I feel like that's not a differentiating factor.
No, but he's just got a he's got a little twinkle. He's got a big old smile. He's got some charisma. Yeah, he's kind of moving my needle as we get a little closer to it as well. Now, could they trade from 9 to 12 and pick up another?
I'd be cool with that. I'm fine with that. But like there's a group of guys that are in my list at number 9, honestly. And if they're all there and available, I'm great with them trading back a couple spots, especially to somebody who wants a wide receiver or something. Great. And I think that there are going to be teams that trade up for wide receivers because they're looking around and being like, dude, they cost $28 million in the open market. I'm going to go take this guy at number 8, number 9, number 10. Sure. Because I don't have to pay him $30 million.
Yep.
All right. Brock, what's a home run draft for the Seahawks?
Oh, what is the one that you laid out? You laid out a pretty
Matt
good one.
Miller, who does a great job. He joined me a couple of weeks ago. I really liked him. He does a good job for ESPN.com. Matt's mock, latest mock, was somehow Ikwunu falls to number 9 because he saw Neal and Cross going ahead of him.
That would be a home run.
All right. So
that would be the Walter
Ikwunu
Jones.
Ikwunu at 9. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had Corral at 40 and David Ojabo from Michigan at 41. Maybe it was vice versa. It doesn't really matter. But those two guys at 40 and 41.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Is that a home run draft? Even though you don't really want a quarterback?
I don't really want a quarterback. You give me Icky. Give me, Kyler Gordon that's fallen a little bit because of his size?
Mm-hmm.
McDuffie.
Cornerback?
Yep. And Ojabo?
Like,
give me those three.
That'd be pretty good draft.
That'd be my home run.
Howdy?
I want them so badly to trade into next year's first. That's all I want. I don't
care
what you do with
this. 40 or 41 and trade to next year.
I don't think
first.
It's possible. I would trade this pick back into the 20s and pick up a first next year, have three firsts next year and two twos, and pick the quarterback you actually want out of the entire class and say, this is what we do. I'm not taking any compromises.
The problem is you could do that and still not get the quarterback you want next year. I mean, that's the only risk of that.
With three first two picks and whatever next year's, you can get any pick you want as long as it's not number one if a team
falls. Yeah, but you may need number one.
Need number one,
I like your idea. Believe me, I'm all about finding the quarterback, but I don't think it's foolproof.
No, there's risks
it's
everywhere.
It's really risky.
Yeah, that's what
I can't
I'm doing.
Do that.
Howdy, are you still running your 10,000 draft scenario, that little computer program you bought off Gizmo?
Doing that thing? I love using that thing. I use it all the time. I don't use it to project their picks because it's 2 years ago they broke me when they had all this cap space and this great great draft capital, and then they spent it on LJ Collier. And we're not doing that anymore. Forget it.
Well, all right, there you go. Brock, any other guys last minute you want me to make sure I'm watching for? I'm hosting with Bump on Saturday morning. Is there anybody I should be looking for day 3?
You know what? Let's talk about that Friday morning.
Okay.
Let's see what happens tomorrow night in the draft. And I'll definitely give you, come Friday morning, a name or two to think in the second and project further down.
Well, I will say, honestly, Heather was asking me what kind of a time it was right now in Seattle sports. Like, it's pretty darn good. The Mariners are fulfilling right now on the dream of what a rebuild was supposed to look like and end up with. And regardless of how this season finishes, right now are playing great baseball that looks to be sustainable. And the Seahawks, while obviously took a huge step back in trading Russell Wilson, are about to have one of the coolest drafts I can remember because of three picks in the top 41 and so many different directions they can go with it. Yep. This is pretty fun. I'm pretty excited for this next week. And obviously we will be back next Thursday or next Wednesday to talk more about it. So Brock, this was fun. Howdy. Thank you as well. We'll see you guys. Enjoy the draft. Enjoy another week of the Mariners and the hay.
He's in the barn, Mark.
See you. Guys, it's a chopper!